Greetings from Earth, and welcome to the Creative Cosmos. I'm your host, Christopher Moores. Broadcasting live from beautiful Minneapolis, Minnesota.
All right, tonight we'd like to talk about the witnessing technique. And later on, maybe we'll talk about some of this with our guest that we have today. We're happy to have a guest on the show for the first time today, Indian in the Machine. He's a composer, a visual artist, spiritually insightful, and he can deliver many interesting thoughts for us in this area that we're going to cover today. So again, the technique we're going to start out with is called the witnessing technique. And it simply revolves around observing in a non-attachment kind of a way. This is where the Buddhist concept of non-attachment comes in, is we observe things, and anything that we can see, we know that we are not it. If we can observe a thought, then we know we can't be that thought, and we begin to get a little bit of space from it. And if we can observe an emotional reaction or impetus, we can know that we are not that as well. So again, we reflect, like many masters have said, it's just like a mirror. We reflect whatever occurs, whatever rises and falls around us. We simply reflect. And in so doing, we become familiar with all these things that are going on, but we get a little bit of space. And in this way, we can also, as Buddha says, tame your wild horses. Bring all these things that carry us through to action and activity and maybe things we might regret later, instead of allowing them to rise up and get us to act on them, we can learn to disconnect from these heated feelings and observe them and cool them down, and in this way start changing the habits and patterns that have been planting bad seeds that we have to then deal with later. So instead of allowing these things to carry through, we observe them and maintain our own self-control. So another thing about this is it's not concentration, it's meditation. And this is a key differential. This is a very important point to take note of, that in when we concentrate, we kind of have a focal point, and we constantly give energy to that focal point. We can develop this ability to very high levels, and it can be very handy in many circumstances. But what we don't want is to be concentrating all the time. We don't want the mind to be constantly churning and always thinking of things and expending all of your life energy cycling through things of which we don't have any control over anyway. That's where the meditation and the witnessing technique of just reflecting things, we allow things to be as they are and realize our place in the universe as a blade of grass, as many have said in the tradition. And we can go with the flow better in that way. So it's a type of relaxed awareness that we're cultivating. So we can be present and have the ability to call forth that focus at any time. So we don't have to do it all the time. just being present, reflecting the moment. So in doing this, we will begin to see many things that we didn't know were there, many influences that we didn't know were coercing us. And it's coming from many different levels. So to begin sorting these out, I'll give you an idea of some of the levels that these various pulls and pushes and forces that right now are going crazy, where they're all coming from. And then once we come to understand them, sort them out, then they can go to their proper place and the energy will be freed up. So I like to examine the chakra system kind of as a guideline to sorting this out. Each chakra is representative and has a realm of its own. So our first chakra is our instinct and more of the primal energies. And these are very powerful, very hot, very strong forces. And it takes a lot of discipline in this practice to learn to separate yourself from that force that is so powerful that it possesses you and seeks to hurl your body forward. And this is not to say that it's wrong in any way. This is not a judgment. We simply must learn about it in order to put it in its proper place and to allow not the force to control us, but to restore the control to ourselves. And then the second chakra is more of a emotional based entity. It governs our feeling, and some say will, and it's the type of will, especially when the emotions are very powerful, like a passionate response. And these can get very confused and tied up over the years. Any resentment or frozen spots from the past can cause reactions that become disconnected from their source. We might mistakenly believe that what we are encountering in the present is the source of our anxiety or stress, when in fact that which is occurring in the present may in fact be triggering the response from the unresolved past. So these are the areas we definitely want to consider in the emotional arena, those areas of ourselves which we have yet to retrieve, to heal, and to release back into their natural state. So by creating a reflective state of where we observe and not react, once again, the Buddhist concept of non-doing, they say once you realize that you've been creating havoc in your life and encouraging destructive patterns to manifest, the first thing you do is you stop. You just stop what you're doing and instead watch. And you'll find that sometime you'll have wanted to react. Something will trigger a powerful feeling in you and you'll want to express it very intensely. But then when you can get that disconnect in the observation of that feeling, you'll realize it as an outside force. It isn't your being. It isn't the center. It isn't the essence of who you are. It's something happening. So we see this is what the witnessing technique is all about, is we just reflect what is happening so we can see it for what it is. And the third chakra governs the thinking, thought process. And in this, there are many wonderful things when it's free-flowing and imaginative. And there are some things which can stop us up when we get into habitual thought patterns, very concrete way of looking at things. And this is also where the basic trap of duality lies, where we divide everything into yes or no, this or that, etc., etc. And this is played upon by the media and the propaganda. They play one side off against the other, and then we are led to believe that, well, one or the other must be right. And we're encouraged to polarize and side with one or the other, when in fact, it is not that way at all. We just have to return control of our thinking to ourselves. This is a very intricate arena, and imitation is the way in which thought patterns are grooved into the mind by outside sources. So, in your thinking, if you can observe your thinking, reflect your thinking, not believe that you are your thinking, and see where it comes from, you can see whether it is your own or not. Maybe even some thought got planted in you many years ago when you were a child. And you even forgot that you picked that thought pattern up. And you've had it all your life, and you've included it in your own self-definition. But this may, in fact, just be an obstacle. It may be a blocker. Because anything that is does not have to be exclusive. We have the right to know it all. And I believe this is the current threshold for humanity right now, especially America, where many people are really thinking a lot, and they have come to rely almost exclusively on what occurs in the mind. And they may prove themselves correct again and again in their own mind, thereby becoming rigid and inflexible in the way they view things and in the way they negotiate the various affairs of the world. So what we want to do is learn to relax this thinking. To when we see a thought that was implanted, then we observe it, trace it back, and let it go. And then we can rewire our own brains in this way, tracing back old thought patterns, releasing them, and then allowing the flow that is restored to create subtler synapse connections, which are able to perceive finer vibrations in the universe. And so these three layers, the first three chakras, in many ways tend to look outwards. The thinking is usually related to the world and what's happening in the world, or chewing over the day's events. And then the emotions many times are our feelings about others and relationships. And, of course, the instinctual is our very basic compulsion forward to seek. So the threshold here is from the mind, which looks out, the third chakra, then to the heart, which is the fourth chakra and turns inward. This is, again, the threshold I believe many are at. And it isn't, there is no clear route. It isn't like you can do it step by step from the mind and reach the heart. It is a leap of faith, a different way of perceiving things, rather than seeking. We open and allow to come to us that which the universe is already providing us. And in so doing, we enter a whole nother arena of perceptions that we previously did not know was there. So people trapped in the mind really believe that that is the reality. But you must know that there is much more beyond. It's vast, endless, and intricate, beautiful, and in no way would you have to sacrifice that which you hold dear. In fact, all talents and abilities you have with the mind will be set free to their fullest capacity if you allow the process to take over. And moving into this arena is also where we begin to develop more and more psychic abilities. We connect with entities that have crossed over with our heart, because love never stops. So when someone we love dies, it doesn't mean that they are now in the past. We are still connected to them, and our relationship goes on. And in fact, the love they showed us in the past can be released, and we can continue to explore the implications of what has occurred, and in fact, deepen our relationship with the one who's passed. And we can open and receive the messages and the signs, and feel in an open manner that which comes to us, we will draw forth beings and entities which seek to express themselves in our world. So this collective move from the head to the heart also goes in with the age of Aquarius, that we are now opening to another whole realm of perception capabilities. Yes, to the mind looking backwards, they seem to have it all figured out. But once we move past that dangerous pitfall on the path, we really begin our journey. And this opening the heart allows the soul entrance into the body and begins to make our small life connect to our greater soul travel. And when this has fully achieved integration and we are free individuals, not trapped in false personalities, but the open and endless expression of who we are in the moment, then we begin to see the realm of the fifth chakra, this highest point of individuality. And again, you still have all the other levels, the heart, the mind, the emotions, and the instinct. And yet you have a core center of which these all revolve around, and you can feel them all and see them all and experience them all deeply, more deeply than ever before. And yet you stand alone, fully connected with the source. In fact, in so doing, you become linked to the universe. So I like to call this stage universal humanity. And you could look at it as a basic enlightenment of where your soul has entered the body. You fully reintegrated. You remember everything that came before, not just in this life, but in all lives. And now you stand here and you're ready to move the ball forward in your progress. Then, of course, the sixth chakra is the third eye. And through this, we can know anything. We just have to trust that it's possible for us to know the things of which it can show us. And also, this is the realm of Christ consciousness and the Om vibration, which, as I've spoken of in other shows and will speak of again and again, is not just an empty vibration, but a living vibration, an intense feeling vibration. And in tuning into this and losing even the sense of higher self is when we become one with all things and spread across the universe into every atom of existence. And the crown chakra, the seventh chakra, is release into that which we came from. And I just simply call it the land of Buddha. So that gives us a little bit of an idea of some of the things which all happen at once inside of us, which we must learn to reflect and differentiate if we want to attain self-mastery. So, in honor of our guest, Indian in the Machine, I thought a great way to introduce him would be to share some of his music.
Now you've come to show you something. Because I love you. I have come a long way. To appear before you today. Hell, this is everything. be well. Let's get each other well. Be well.
Okay, if everything went well and we timed it right, you just heard Be Well by Indian in the Machine. And I hope that we have him online right now.
Hello, Chris.
Peter, are you with us?
Yes, I am. How are you, Chris?
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Glad to have you on our show tonight.
Oh, I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Would you like to, I noticed in your biography you talked about how you used to have a teaching job and you moved on to expressing yourself in other ways. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, originally before I started writing music and doing photography online, I was teaching business at a college here in Saskatoon. And I was actively trading in stocks at the time too, and so heavily involved in the business,
oh, wow.
In the business realm of things. Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, you know, following things very closely, I started to see that things were not right in the markets, and that there was some trading patterns that were taking place. And so, of course, I was, you know, really concerned because I had this money in the market, and
mm-hmm.
I asked some of the authorities what was happening, and there was literally not a response. And so right away, I mean, I think that whole process was triggered me towards my music, which had always been there.
Mm-hmm.
But I had made that, I had taken a detour through two other areas of learning. And then basically got disillusioned with what I was teaching, of course, because I was teaching business. And
Okay.
And then, of course, realizing that I couldn't continue to teach business in good conscience with what I was finding out. And which was fine, because it took me on to some amazing journeys in the creative realm, and allowed me to move my, you know, my creativity there and to nurture it there. And I've been having a lot of adventures in my living room as a result, and on the internet as a result as well.
Yeah, that's the beauty of technology today. Is you're in Saskatchewan, I'm in Minneapolis, and we're running through a board in Houston, and we're all working towards the same cause.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we're seeing, your site is called Creative Cosmos. And I mean, so we're seeing and experiencing firsthand, for those of us that are already there, is what an amazing trip this planet is when you live it creatively.
Yeah. Yeah. So how did you specifically notice, like, did it happen over time where you felt more and more compression in your old job? I know you were talking about, like, some things being out of your control. Did it take place over months, or did it happen pretty suddenly for you where you realized that you're going to have to make a change?
Well, I always knew I was going to make my way back to the music, and those were my original intentions, way in the back of my head, even when I chose to go into the sciences and then into business.
Mm-hmm.
And I had always planned to kind of finance my creative side. And then, I started to save money and put it into my retirement. And I started to go, okay, well, if I keep up this process, than the original intention of me going through, you know, university and then through employment wasn't happening. And because I designed it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to kind of look, okay, well, what are my true intentions? And so that became, you know, kind of the impetus of an intentional process to understand myself, really.
Yeah, so you're talking like what I call natural tendencies, rediscovering like essentially your talents to then manifest what you were here for, what you were brought here for.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, so it's absolutely about, you know, finding out where your true talents lie, and also a process of shedding away that which is no longer relevant in your life. Because in order to, I mean, you have to kind of clean up the clutter.
Yeah.
In order to make room for the new energy to manifest and to, you know, to shine, to build, and to grow.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes that's not that easy to do. Did you find that was, did you have any particular challenges in that process at all as you were sorting it out and kind of reorienting yourself to this new idea?
Well, I found that the idea was of manifesting the life that I want. I started to notice it was directly tied to what I was doing in the physical realm. So, I mean, what I was eating, how I was looking after my body,
mm-hmm.
You know, my sleeping patterns, the types of chemicals from the environment and from my diet and from, you know, household cleaners and cosmetics, like shampoos and conditioners, all these things, I started to see them as having, like, basically being toxic, as having, like, all these chemicals that were I was ingesting, you know, and swallowing and putting on my skin. And I wasn't thinking clearly because I was born into that process.
Yeah.
That there was anything to question about all of it.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, I often bring up that very point that when you're immersed in it, you don't even know to question it because that's the subset of your reality at that time.
Right. Right. And then I started to move towards a state of more purity. And then I started to notice my chakras, which you talked about earlier in the program.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people who don't experience chakras or don't understand them, often that is only a case of living in a toxic body. And not because you're, you know, a person that's flawed in any way, that they're not able to experience their chakras. So moving towards a state of purifying the body, then you start to, because our bodies are sensitive instruments of energy.
Yeah.
And so you can't kind of dump this and that into your system and then expect that sensitive instrument to work properly.
Yeah. Why do you think it is more people don't pay attention to that? Do you think it's just because they've been immersed in it since the beginning? Or?
Well, I think that, for example, like our health system doesn't take, you know, chakras all that interest. You know, they're not all that interested in it, and they don't draw public attention towards them.
Hmm.
And you know, for me, if I can accept that chakras exist, but because other people are telling me, but yet I don't experience them, then having that stimulus from those people saying, okay, these things are real, eventually, you know, if you experience a spark of one, you know, whether it's your third eye or any of them, then you start to go, okay, this is a new thing. I'm catching on. What else is there? And so having these experiences then open up the doors of like spiritual adventures.
Yeah, I think that even, you know, just you and I talking about it right now, and I know for a fact I've experienced my chakras. You know, at first you get your first inclinations, and then, you know, you're kind of like wondering about it. But then after a while, it just becomes a normal part of life. It becomes a part of of everything you do. You just know that you are these centers of light, even the type of starlight, even.
And then, but also, I would say that I think people do experience their chakras in when they're kind of vibrating lower. You know, so for example, I mean, fear. I mean, we can all kind of feel that when it vibrates in a certain way that isn't like in harmony with, you know, with our bodies. But then when you experience them, when you feel that they're kind of tuning up and vibrating, you know, with more in harmony with you know, good vibrations of the universe, and you start to kind of say, okay, you know, like.
Yeah, sometimes I feel it, even like a shiver in certain spots, or I'll even feel like my hand will go like to my heart or to my third chakra and just start going in little circles around it, or all kinds of signs of their activity.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's even more than the seven that we generally talk about. I mean, there's so many of them. I mean, I'm not even aware of them all.
Yeah, right. We have like in our hands and in our feet.
Exactly.
And some of the other points. It makes total sense. You know, it's the way I look at it is the energy goes through our chakras, which then kind of branch into our nervous system and externalize as our skin sheath that we then face things down here with.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then, so once you learn about the chakra system, I mean, the whole point of it is that it helps you to get to know yourself, and you can start to become aware of where your issues lie, because you experience it physically through your body.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, again, related to this finely tuned instrument is to start ingesting things that purify the body.
Mm-hmm.
Because no matter how much a person can tell you about the chakras, unless you fine tune that instrument, which is taking responsibility and awareness for the things that we're ingesting and allowing in our environment.
Yeah, I even noticed myself like that, doing that technique I was talking of earlier of just reflecting and kind of seeing cause and effect relationship. Like when I eat this stuff, I can feel bad, feel like I have less energy. Just kind of paying attention to the input and the output, the cause and the effect, it also starts sorting this process out as well.
Right. And then, of course, it tends to this whole process of looking inward and becoming energy sensitive is a great way, I mean, to live creatively. Because then you're using our bodies and our emotions and our sensitivities to energy as inspiration, and experiencing our inspirations through our bodies and through our chakras as well.
Yeah, you're right. We have to fine tune our instrument if we want to perceive the higher vibrations, no doubt about it. So yeah, I'm also interested in how you came to the name Indian in the Machine, and tell us a little bit about what that means to you and how it applies to your work.
Okay. Well, I started to think about giving myself a name, an Indian name, because I thought that I liked the idea that it gave my life's work a focus.
Mm-hmm.
And so then Indian in the Machine was that I wasn't going to begrudge where I was at or where I had been, right? So if I had been in the business realm, if I had been in sciences, I wasn't going to say, okay, that was a mistake.
Yeah, it all goes towards the cause in the end, one way or another.
Right. So then I realized, okay, well, I mean, I'm not going to, as you know, like be, I'm not going to reject any of that, because, I mean, that's the life that we were all born into. Right. And so we're learning about our relationship with the machine, essentially technology. Right.
Yeah.
And so what's kind of the whole concept of Indian Machine is finding, you know, living naturally within a technological world.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. Also, you know, kind of being starting to see the machine, you know, like the way that humans exist together, and, you know, all the networks of corporations and groups and ways that people collectively gather. I also consider that the machine as well.
And like you said, seeing the machine, or, you know, along the lines of what I was saying, just observing it and knowing it's outside of you, not having your identity tied up in that.
Exactly. Right. Because some of us, we are tied into that, into the identities within the machine that are created in boardrooms.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I know. There are definitely people who are planning the message that gets put in a lot of people's heads, no doubt about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So then it's nice to kind of to recognize that, okay, here is this machine, and it's like, okay, it's not necessarily there for, whose interest is it there for? Is it for mine? I mean, is this serving me spiritually? Is it helping me to lead a healthier life? Is society helping me to get to know myself better, or is society a distraction for myself?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then so you kind of, you know, you start to have all these epiphanies about where, you know, your energies should be going. And essentially, you know, for me, it's like, okay, well, I like the idea that my energies go towards manifesting, you know, light, which can come in many forms. You know, awareness, art, well-prepared meal,
mm-hmm.
you know, walking down the street with, like, a smile, or, you know, with leaving the house with good intentions.
Yeah.
You know, those are easy ways to shine light in the world.
Right, how you radiate and
yeah.
how that just being in that state lifts other people up and also helps... I think that you're providing a model as well for other people who feel called to do the same thing.
I think that we're all connected, so we're helping each other at many different levels. You know. So yeah, we're all working towards that process of using our creativity to find our true selves and to help the planet and to help other people find their true selves.
Yeah, I agree. And then when you said earlier how it can express or manifest, this creative energy can manifest in many different ways, in your work you show that. You write a lot of wonderful music, and you have these angel photos. If the people out there are not familiar with your site definitely you should go check it out at www.spiritfindermusic.com, and you can see some of these incredible angel in the sky photos that Dieter Indian and the Machine has taken. You want to tell us a little bit about those and what they mean to you?
Sure. Well, I started taking photos I think in my last year of undergrad, when I was I took a photography course, and when I talk about photos, I mean specifically the ones that I've been showing on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started taking pictures down at the beach as part of like the requirements for my course. And I thought, well, you know, here's a great way for me to do my homework. I can hang out at the beach and I can take, you know, these photographs, and I don't have to do my homework in a, you know, a classroom or in a stuffy environment.
Right.
And so that led I started looking at the sky a lot more often. And I remember one picture in particular was taken when I was at on the Saskatchewan River with the woman who was wearing wings. And there were these wings that she had, I think, for some, you know, they were part of some costume. And so she brought them out as for something that we might potentially pose with.
Mm-hmm.
And when she put these wings on, and I started taking these pictures of her, these wings formed in the sky. And so I was like, we both looked at that, and we were like, can you believe that there are these wings in the sky? And so I took a few pictures of her. And part of me always, from that point on, kind of thought, you know, that can't be a coincidence. And it almost seemed, and I started to kind of sense that there was like an intelligence about how they formed, like right at the most opportune moment for a spectacular photo.
Yeah, well, it definitely makes sense that when you read, you write on your photos, angels in the sky, and you look at the pictures and you can see it. As I mentioned to you once in email, after looking at some of your photos, I was on a trip and I looked up in the sky, and just kind of based on the nuance of your photos, I was like, I knew it wasn't just a cloud formation. Not only did my mind see the cloud, but I also felt, like what you said, the intent or the presence underneath it.
Yeah, yeah. And then when you're in the presence of many of these cloud beings, which they're known as thunderbirds or sylphs, and these cloud beings in the sky, I started to recognize that there was like a socialization about the clouds.
Hmm.
And they started to, I mean, gather in formation and move against where the other clouds, the streams of where the other clouds were traveling. So against the wind, it kind of looked
like. Oh, yeah.
Yet maintaining their shape. And so I started to play with the notion, okay, you know, like, what if these aren't clouds? And if I start to perceive them as being, you know, beings of some sort, now does this make sense with what I'm seeing?
Yeah.
And that started to resonate with me. And the cells continue to provide amazing photogenic moments. That's available to really anyone at this point who chooses awareness, sky awareness, and happens to have their camera, and then to convey those intentions. For me, I'm not telepathic, but if I accept the notion that my thoughts are being read, then I communicate ideas and intentions out there.
Uh-huh. Well, it sounds like this is how I talk to some people about learning to tune into their psychic abilities. When you say you were looking at that cloud and you started, you kind of imagined what your imagination kind of took over and showed you what it was behind the scenes. You know, I often make the point that imagination is reality of a different kind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because when you're imagining, you're starting to perceive other languages that other people may not be aware of.
Yeah, there's a whole other realm of communications and beings and entities out there.
Yeah.
Of all sorts and levels.
Yeah. And so part of my thoughts with the sylphs is that I started to convey to them the thought that I would take pictures of them if they would provide me with something that I could, you know, something impressive that I could show people.
Yeah, excellent.
You know, because I didn't want to have to kind of, you know, try to convince people that this cloud was something, you know, something beyond a cloud when it just looked like a cloud.
Right. After a while, looking at the photos, it becomes self-evident. You can see it for yourself, and then, like I said, it'll trigger real-life experiences, which is the key, the point, what we're doing it for, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, people don't realize that we are moving, you know, past the third dimension and into the fourth and beyond, and part of the fourth is learning the new languages of the fifth. So it's kind of like a school ground of new universal languages.
Yeah, symbols and all sorts of things like that.
Yeah, symbology is another one. I'm really fascinated with numerology at this point, and things like that.
Yeah, I found that anything you can kind of agree upon with the universe as a language will become a means with which it can communicate with you.
Yeah. Yes, so essentially the language is what you're saying, and I agree with, is that you can choose the language. It's whatever you're willing, whatever game you're willing to play with your with the environment around you, in terms of recognizing patterns and the symbology, and then recognizing this. That there may be a language there, and then opening yourself up to accepting it, and then responding.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you. Yeah. So in the last couple of minutes here, you want to tell us about where you're going with the... You recently opened a new site, the SpiritFinderMusic.com site up, in addition to your original Indian in the Machine site that had your music on it. You want to tell us in the last couple of minutes here what you... Well, about a minute or so before we get to the... And everybody stay tuned for this, the collaborative track between Indian in the Machine and Chris Moores of the Creative Cosmos. We teamed up for a special music event to end the show with, so that'll be something to look forward to. So you want to kind of wrap it up and let us know where you're going with the new website and things like that?
Oh, sure. Well, with the new website, I got, you know, it's a chance to get some of my photographs out there and some more of my ideas and poetry and articles and imagery and music. And to start networking a little bit beyond my living room and using the creative energies in order to manifest, adventures beyond my living room.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've done the tourist thing and seen part of the world that way. And I'd like to see part of the world as like a creative being and experience it that way.
Yeah, and here we are doing it even as we speak.
That's right, and it's certainly been an adventure talking with you, Chris. It's been a pleasure, and it's been fun.
Yeah, it was great to connect and to share our thoughts with everybody. And next week we're going to start having the call-in capability for everybody listening, and I hope to go into the chakras and the dream realm and explore some of what occurs in the astral plane and some of what you might run into there. So that's what we're looking forward to next week. So please call in. We'll have our new 800 numbers by then. And I look forward to talking with everybody and in this kind of a way about what's going on in the universe and where we head from here. So to end the show tonight, as I promised on my website, creativecosmos.org, and as we talked about earlier, we're going to end with our collaborative track, Indian in the Machine.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others' endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.